We're back on Canuck Central. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah here in the Kintec studio. This hour of Canuck Central brought to you by your Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. Fast lunch doesn't have to mean fast food. Satisfy your midday cravings by choosing a main side and drink for only $15, served in 20 minutes or less. Let's go to the hotline powered by Power West Industries, where we find our weekly contributor here on Canuck Central. It is Don Taylor, Donnie and Dolly, 10 to noon on Czech TV Monday through Friday. Donnie, how does it feel? Canucks are champs.
Yeah, I've lived long enough to see the Canucks raise the cup. So that's everything's perfect now. That was something special. Really great. Just so happy for everybody, including everybody in the Vancouver organization. Well, they're a part of the Vancouver organization. Just a tremendous day, and how everybody in Abbotsford and everybody in the Lower Mainland, the Fraser Valley, everybody was just so into this. My kids were into it. It was just fabulous.
It really is. You know, people really embraced it. We were at and in Abbotsford for the games 3, 4, and 5 there, and people were, I mean, the building was rocking. Clearly, the city has taken to the team during this run, and you know, it's been a few years now that they've been there, and for as much as there's a lot of negativity around the organization as a whole, like, you win a Calder Cup, your AHL team wins with, on the back of a lot of young players, prospects even, in Linus Karlsson, Archdeep Baines, Artur Shilovs, all these guys. It does show that there is some good things going on under the hood for this organization, even if there's a long way to go to them being a true Stanley Cup contender.
I think any organization that didn't win the Stanley Cup would love for this to happen to their organization. And it's nothing but a positive sign. And it wasn't, yeah, there were veterans like Sammy Blay that helped out. I get that. Christian Molanin. But a lot of it was on the shoulders of young players. And I think most NHL organizations, even the more successful ones, would just love for this to happen to them. And look, you talk about the things that sell for a National Hockey League franchise. One, of course, is wins, lots of them, and the other is hope and promise. And, you know, that seeing Abbotsford win like that, seeing those young players perform that well, that creates hope. And that is good for business, and nothing but positive for the Vancouver Canucks out of Abbotsford. And, you know, guys, we've been saying, I don't know, halfway through the season, but the way, not only this on-ice success, forget about, this is long before you thought they were going to win the Calder Cup, but not only the on-ice success, but how the Abbotsford players performed on the ice at the NHL level, by far the most positive story for the Canucks, and it just grew and grew and got better and better, and good on them.
Yeah, and I'm just so happy for the fans because of how happy the fan base was. Like, I was expecting the fan base to be happy, and I totally understand Abbotsford fans, those who have been supporting the team since they moved to Abbotsford, and all the fans being there throughout this year in this playoff run. But even your average Canucks fan who's never been to an Abbey game was absolutely delighted to watch this happen. I think it just shows you the power and passion of this fan base. And I know people point to this market as being bad and negative a lot. They point to the media, and fair, I mean, we can have bad takes, and we can stir it up. It is what it is, right? But as far as the fans are concerned about how you know, rough they can be, I think this just shows you the level of passion, because I don't know how many markets where the NAHL team winning is going to have thousands upon thousands of Canucks fans consuming content like this is an NHL playoff game, is showing up to parades and showing up to celebrate in the city.
It's the fan base is so caring, and even when it criticizes, that includes the media, they criticize because they care. They're just so passionate. I mean, you know, we saw South Fraser Way yesterday. People lined up on the streets, cars honking in Abbotsford. And beyond that, guys, my kids went to games. And, you know, we're in the Port Moody area, and they had no problem. They went to the games. They bucked up, believe it or not. And, you know, their dad's a freeloading member of the media. They went. their friends went out, and everybody, you know, caught the passion. And the other thing that I know a lot of people appreciated is I've got a look. I'm a little bit older, And I have relatives who are a little older than me. I come from a very big family on both sides, as a matter of fact. Well, of course, a lot of them couldn't. They had no clue how to, you know, watch the game on television or their computers. So they ended up listening to you guys. They ended up listening to Sportsnet 650 and Brandon Astle's call. Mm-hmm. And I had two of them say to me that it reminded them, and remember, these are older people, reminded them of listening to Jim Robson back in the day. Mm-hmm. And just how special that was. And they just loved it. They loved that, you know, the theater of the mind that only the radio can create. And it was just a really, really good story for the young fans, for the old fans, for everybody. And, you know, long-suffering Canuck fans, that little taste of sweetness over the last few months. And it's really been great.
I mean, even Connor Bedard, longtime Canucks fan, was showing up and supporting the Abbotsford Canucks. Pretty incredible.
Yeah, no kidding. I don't know, like, if you guys were there, or if he got mobbed or whatever, was in the press box. I'm not really sure, but man, that kind of, you know, it kind of showed where the fan in him anyway, yeah. where his heart is. And we all remember that, you know, famous, I guess infamous for Blackhawks fans, clip of him when he was with Regina and he predicted Vancouver would win the Stanley Cup. So yeah, that was special. It was just great. And the other thing too is, you know, in a barn like that, and that's a compliment, by the way. I'm not putting down the Abbotsford Center, but you are just so close, and the roof is low, and it's just very old school, and there's nothing wrong with that. It was just a really, really different experience, less corporate experience for a lot of people, and I just loved it.
Yeah, it was a really good barn, and so Bedard had a suite. Him and Ken Johnson had a suite at the game on Saturday. And I had heard that once he was spotted in the parking lot, like leaving the parking lot on the way out of the game, when he got mobbed by fans looking for autographs. And he was good about it, but that's when he finally got noticed. It's still kind of incredible that he was there. You know, one thing about the run and being at games 3, 4, and 5, and Archdeep Baines kept scoring all these goals, and he was putting on a show. He had the 4-point game.
Setup last night.
The setup last night for the winning goal. That whole shift was great. Him and Carlson just dominated this entire series. Mm-hmm. Charlotte had no answer for them. But the way the crowd responded to Archdeep Baines and the way they just embraced a local kid being a star player with that group. I mean, we saw a little bit of it when he scored his first NHL goal with the Vancouver Canucks this year. I mean, people would just, this is an unbelievable story. Local kid, undrafted, free agent, signed by the team, and he's growing his NHL career, keeps punching above his weight. Nobody expected this out of him. He's a star in the AHL and trying to take that next step of his career. But I mean, if he were to take that step and be a contributor and a big part of the Canucks moving forward, I mean, I don't know if there's ever been a fan favorite quite like that in recent memory, for sure. It would be something to see.
Well, yeah, and it's just so important to the South Asian community in our area as well. And you're absolutely right. I mean, what a hero he is right now, and how that could grow to another level. And, you know, let's forget about ethnicity for a second. You mentioned being undrafted. People forget that, you know, in he was a leading scorer in the Western Hockey League.
Yeah.
But, like, I mean, there is something there. Like, how he, you know, maybe it was a situation where he was a late bloomer. I'm not really sure. But how he, you know, slipped through the cracks, I'm not really sure. But he ends up staying. And, look, maybe he has to change the way he plays. Maybe, you know, a different role. I'm not really sure. But he sticks around and contributes to the Vancouver Canucks. That's just a big, big deal. It would be, I think, like Alex Burrows, except he's from here. And that would be something really, really special. Burrows, of course, being undrafted, a complete underdog, and I think Archdeep would fall into that category.
Well, and you know, it's really funny because last night on the post game show, we had people texting in to give credit, and somebody texted in and said, "You guys have to give Jim Benning credit because he traded Jonathan Dahlin for Linus Karlsson, and Linus Karlsson just helped the Abbey Canucks win the Calder Cup." I mean, he had 14 goals, and if the MVP wasn't Artur Shelov, it could have been Linus Karlsson with his series clinching goal and all the big ones he scored throughout the playoffs. And we saw a lot to be excited about from him at the end of the season with the big club, and I know we talked about that, but how excited should we be about what he might be able to provide and earn for himself in training camp?
Well, it just looks like a great point about the Dolan trade, but just keeps growing and growing. And, you know, he ends up, well, Abbotsford ended up with the top three scorers in Carlson, Baines, and Sammy Blais. And then Max Sasson was in the top 10 as well. So that's really special. But Linus Carlson, I even think just from, you know, whenever he's been at the National Hockey League level, even early on, I never thought for a second, especially when you go to the games and you see how hard he works, I never thought he looked out of place. And now you know that there's the very least some potential. I know it's another level, but there's the potential of some offense down there. Again, there's so many great underdog stories down in Abbotsford. You just hope that two or three or four of them could crack the Vancouver lineup and do something really special for an organization that really needs something like that. Like, you know, draft picks, some of them haven't worked out, trades, some of them haven't worked out. There's been a lot of negativity. And to have something like this happen out of nowhere and to win the championship is outstanding. Now, if you get some players from this Abbotsford team to stick at the National Hockey League level for a significant amount of time and contribute to some Vancouver success, man, what a story. And everybody's going to be pulling for them because there's that underdog factor with everybody down in Abbotsford when it comes to them playing at the NHL level.
Don Taylor, our guest. So the focus shifts to this week now. Draft on Friday and free agency a week from now. We know the Canucks are involved in a lot of things. And, you know, usually that might bring excitement, like, hey, your team's going to be aggressive this offseason. But I feel like there's an uneasiness amongst most Canucks fans about just how aggressive the Canucks might get over the next week, Donnie.
Well, also, even if they draft somebody, they're going to be uneasy. You know, we all know they've nailed some. I get it. But there's always going to be uneasiness. I think the uneasiness right now is, like, what are they going to do? Are they really going to trade that 15th pick? The only way that goes over, I think, is if somehow they move up. Maybe Philadelphia wants Thatcher Demko. I heard talk about that today. You know, do the Oilers want him? Is that a smart move within the division? So is that 15th pick in play? I'm okay with it if you move up. But I just want elements for the future. But, yeah, of course they're going to be uncomfortable about what happens with this team. Well, you know, given history, why wouldn't you be? And you just know with Rutherford, you know, given his history, you just know something's going to happen. There's going to be some sort of move. What's going to happen with Besser in a week or so? What's going to happen? You know, what's going to happen with Pugh Suter? It's just it's very entertaining, extremely intriguing. But given history, you hope they don't mess things up. And I'm not trying to be negative. I know, but I just know the history of this team, and I think that's why a lot of people in the fan base, despite Abbotsford's success, on pins and needles right now, and I don't blame them.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, especially considering the stakes, right? And we know management has said they are going to be very aggressive, but one thing has been very clear. The prices are very high. The Canucks are limited on assets, and yep. Are they going to overspend? I know Rutherford told us that they are not going to be desperate, but essentially over the next 48 to 72 hours, we're going to find out whether they're disciplined or desperate.
Yeah, and I just get, is desperate the right move? You hope the adjective is smart, that they make mm-hmm. a smart move. Look, and I know I go on and on about a rebuild. That's not going to happen. Whatever move they make, whether they trade away the 15th pick or not, whatever they do, they move up in the draft, give away that 15th or trade away that 50th. You just hope that it's smart. And they've made some smart moves. Don't get me wrong. This management group hasn't been, you know, not everything has been totally negative. You just hope that it's smart, and I know they hope that the fan base accepts whatever they do.
So we've seen Elias Pettersson's name pop up in the trade discussion yet again. It doesn't feel like that lives in a ton of reality. Like, it's still going to have to be a blockbuster deal, it feels like, for the Canucks to engage with that. Just because, you know, if you trade Pettersson for, let's say, a winger of some kind and a futures pick, you're pretty empty down the middle of the ice, Donnie. And I don't know how you go into next season not, upgrading through the middle or taking away one of your top centermen when you have so little through the middle already.
Yeah, you would think it would have to be center for center, but that, how, you know, so you're pigeonholing yourself, and how difficult could that be? You know, guys, there have been three or four insiders who have said that, and that includes Nick Kypreos, who was on 650 just an hour or two ago, who have said that they put out their trade list going into July 1st. And going into the draft, and everybody I've seen has Pettersson on that list. I don't think that just happened. People like Nick and other reporters, whatever network or whatever publication, whatever website they're working for, they are connected, and oftentimes they will get fed stuff by people in different organizations. So I do believe that there's something brewing with Elias Pettersson, or at the very least the Canucks or somebody is throwing his name out there, letting everybody know that they're listening and that he's available. So I do think there's something to that. In the meantime, you know, on Twitter today, we see the talk from Sweden, from Pettersson himself, that he believes he's having a very positive experience in terms of his conditioning, which is in contrast to last year. So really, just, it's always interesting, guys, but really interesting, you know, when it comes to Elias Pettersson these days.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think ultimately I'll believe a trade when I see one. That's where I'm at with these sort of things, right?
Yeah.
But the best thing to happen for this team would be for him to regain his form and for him to be worth the contract he has, because even if they make a trade, Donnie, and if they do, you know, at least we move forward and perhaps we put this conversation behind us. But it's unlikely they're going to get somebody back who can be a 100-point center like he was a couple of years ago. So the best-case scenario is for him to live up to his potential and finally be that guy. And if he's here, I certainly hope so, because I think that would change how people feel about this team moving forward with or without Quinn Hughes. And we all want Quinn to stay, but you might feel a bit better about the situation if you feel like, hey, at least we got our center locked up and he looks like a legitimate number one guy again.
Yeah, it's not even close. That's the best case scenario. I mean, a trade, you know, question marks all around, and there's still question marks surrounding Elias Pettersson. But you're bang on. The best solution, and probably is, you know, The easiest solution it's not going to be maybe easy for him to, you know, bulk up and do the right things in the off season, but the best thing for the Canucks is he gets back to form. I mean, it's happened with players before, and you just hope it can happen to him again. I will say this, in those Bauer promos, I don't know if I was just looking for it, but I'm not the only one, but he looked thicker. You know, when he had the all-white, I don't know if you guys saw that last week. He had the all-white outfit on, including white pants, white hockey pants.
Well, white makes you look bigger too, right? I think that's what it is.
Absolutely. So that might have been it. And that did. But I'm talking about like his neck looked bigger.
Yeah, for sure.
And I know that's not, maybe it was the angle he was photographed at or the video. I don't know. But or maybe like I was just hoping for that for Vancouver fans' sake. And, you know, he looked like he was thicker. Who knows? But I thought there was at least some promise there. So, and it hasn't been all that long, but it looks positive so far.
Before we let you go, Donnie, coming full circle to our conversation about the Abbey Canucks winning and you reminiscing about how it reminded you of Jim Robson calling the game.
Yeah.
And a lot of people texting in about that. Mike and Whistler says, I'm in my 40s and I remember listening to Jim Robson on the radio because we didn't get every Canucks game on TV. Yeah. And what a great story by Don. I'm so happy for the Abbotsford Canucks. Callie from Vanderhoof says, my dad listened last night with us. He literally said the same thing. It reminded me of him. It reminded him of being a kid again. So certainly hit the right note there, Donnie.
Yeah, and, you know, I remember it well, and there was a lot. I tweeted this out last night, and the folks at Canucks Army did the same thing, and they ran a picture of the old Vancouver Canucks of the old Western League, last season as a minor league team, winning what was called the Patrick Cup in 1970, and a celebration with Andy Bathgate, who's a Hockey Hall of Famer who ended his career with the Vancouver Canucks. And those were great memories for me. And everybody is bang on, talked about that. Like, you listen on the radio, and it was Jim Robson. It was so special. And again, I know a lot of guys were probably frustrated trying to get the game on the damn TV these days. They couldn't figure it out, so screw it. They listened to the radio, and it was probably better for them because it brought them back. And that's that's one thing the Abbotsford Canucks did for a lot of people. And Brandon Astle and everybody involved in the broadcast and yourselves, it really brought people back to the good old days when it was just the radio, and it really was special. It was a really great moment, and I'm not just talking about yesterday, but the whole drive. Great moment in Vancouver sports history. We'll remember it for a long time.
Donnie, you're the best. Thanks for this.
Anytime, guys. Lots of fun.
There he is. The great Don Taylor joining us on the hotline, powered by Power West Industries. Don't get caught in the dark when it matters most. Visit them at powerwest.ca today. They keep the lights on.
Do we have time for a quick update?
Yes.
The Vancouver Professional Women's Hockey League has made its first round selection.
PWHL Vancouver just drafting 7th overall, and they've selected veteran forward, leading scorer for Finland all time at the World Championships. Michelle Karvonen is the first ever selection by PWHL Vancouver in the entry draft. So they got a veteran player. She's 35 years old, when you think of entry draft, it's usually think of young players. Michelle is not that in this situation, has played with some of Vancouver's players in the past. So she's joining up with a couple of former teammates and is another addition to a forward group that's looking pretty interesting, because she brings some ready-made talent into the PWHL Vancouver roster.
I know people who cover the PWHL closely are very impressed by the team Vancouver is putting together, and looks like they're going to be very competitive in their first year in the league.
JanPro, from the break room to the boardroom and everything in between. JanPro keeps workplaces tidy, clean, and disinfected. For a free quote, visit janpro.ca. Shane Malloy, tees up the NHL entry draft, which will begin on Friday. That's next on Canuck Central. Back in on Canuck Central, it's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, hour number two of the program. This hour is brought to you by BC Liquor. Until June 28th, save $6 on Eccentric Cabernet Sauvignon and Coors Light 24-packs. Visit your nearest BC Liquor location today. Enjoy responsibly. Enjoying the music there. Felt like something Marty Jannetty and Shawn Michaels would come out to as the Rockers back in the day.
You're such a pro, Dan. I told him one more wrestling reference before I end the show, and he came out at 5:02
and just nailed it, crushed it. Yeah,
it was a great tag team, Marty Jannetty and Shawn Michaels, before Michaels became the Heartbreak Kid. It was great. All right, enough of that. Let's bring in our next guest, who has a lot more to offer to the conversation than I do. That's Shane Malloy, Hockey Prospect Radio on Sirius XM and a regular contributor here on Canuck Central. Thanks for this, Shane. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. Hey, look. The best tag team is the Hart Foundation.
Oh, yeah. That will never be 100%. Beat.
No, they're the best. I mean, there's the Killer Bees and they're the British Bulldogs, but at the end of the day, it's the Hart Foundation.
Yeah, Legion of Doom had a place in my heart for a time, but it's a long time ago now. But let's move on. It is draft week, Shane, and we did have some news today as the New York Rangers decided, you know what, let's pass on from the 12th overall pick, which they got of course. They sent to Vancouver, and then Vancouver sent off to Pittsburgh. But what do you make of New York's choice to send off this pick and maintain their unprotected 2026 draft choice?
Honestly, I'm a little surprised, to be honest. One is that you know what you have this year, and there's an unknown next year. And then on top of that, what message are you sending to your organization, your fan base? We're worried we might be worse? Like, what does that say?
Yeah.
Right? I'm just, like, from that type of perspective, I'd rather take the player now. And then on top of that, you have to wait an extra year for development from the player that you take in 2026. And the 2026 draft may be better. Most likely it will be in terms of its quantity. But you're picking in the top. When you're picking in the top 15, you're going to get a player. Or at least you better get a player. And then I have a lot of faith in John Lilly in New York. He was with the Toronto Maple Leafs, and as much as people like to rag on the Leafs, their drafting development success from 06 to 15 was the fourth best in the league. They had one draft year, the Tlusti draft, where they got six players out of seven to play more than 200 games. So I would have leaned on John Lilly and took the player.
Well, and I think that's what's going to be really fascinating for me. We were talking about this earlier on the show leading up to Friday, because so far, everything you hear about the value of draft picks, and which is counterintuitive, because usually when you get close to the draft, the value of the draft picks go up. But this year, it seems like the value of the draft picks are going down. How much of that do you think is bluffing, or is this truly a year where GMs just don't rate the value of first-round picks the same?
Well, this time of year, right after the Stanley Cup final, to right until we hit July 1st. It's lies, lies, and more lies.
Yeah.
So anything that you hear coming out of front offices, I'm like, when I have conversations, I'm like, right. Okay. And they know right. that I know that they're like, don't bother lying to me. Cause I think we've been around long enough to be able to pick up on those signals. Now, I think it's a little bit different this year is cause there's a pretty big group of teams that want to make a push to the next level, but they need an NHL player to do it. So that's why there's those conversations about draft picks being traded off. It's not necessarily they think the draft pick value has disintegrated. It's just that that's where there's a few of those, too many of those teams in the same cycle. So when you have teams all looking to trade off a first-round pick for a player and you don't have enough sellers, that's what this marketplace currently is. So I'm curious to see how this plays out. And I think sometimes you have to be careful. I think when you get into like the first 21 picks of the draft, you know, you're going to be 70% chance or higher. You're going to get a really good player. So I don't know how many of these teams are going to be willing to trade out. We'll see. It may be just conjecture, but at the end of the day, we may see a few trades.
Yeah, we've heard it obviously with the Canucks and the trade offer to the Minnesota Wild for Marco Rossi that Minnesota, at least to this point, hasn't been too keen on because they want something more ready for their roster to help them now. Montreal's run into this problem because, again, same thing. Teams seem to want players or not want to give up players that are helping their roster right now for futures. There's one team that's kind of in sell mode right now, Shane. It's the Pittsburgh Penguins. Everybody else is kind of like, nah, we want to get better. We want players to help us now.
Well, and that's the thing is if you look at Pittsburgh and the players are willing to sell off, they're not exactly young. So you better be in win now mode if you're gonna get a Brian Rust.
Yeah.
Or you're going to get a Raquel, or you're going to get a player like that. You have to be, your window has to be now. It can't be in 3 years down the road and you're building towards that. Because by the time you get there, those players are not going to be productive for you and it's not going to be worth the price you pay. So that's the situation we're in. And I think as well, the cap rising has also added to this little bit of a turmoil in that respect as well. So everything sort of come to one juncture, and I'm curious to see which general managers really play this market the best. And we'll find out who are really like the savvy general managers at the end of the day.
Do you have a thought on Minnesota rejecting of the 15th overall and something else? We're not sure exactly what in exchange for Marco Rossi.
One, it depends on what the something else is. And I don't know what that is.
It feels like it's a prospect of some kind because Minnesota is looking for NHL players right now.
Well, unfortunately, the Vancouver Canucks don't have particularly a large group of prospects to deal with in the first place. So they're dealing from, you know, a position of weakness in that regard. However, look, you know, I think, you know, in the last 3-4 years, Minnesota's done a pretty good job of drafting. So I'm sure the amateur staff would be salivating to get another first-round pick because they think they can make something out of it. But then I also understand, you know, Bill Guerin's position because he's going to want a player to help them win because they want to be in the playoffs and they want to start building towards that. And, you know, taking a pick that is going to be 3 to 4 years away doesn't really help them. So I get it.
Yeah.
You know, one side of the group wants the pick and the other side says, well, that doesn't help us now.
Yeah, no, I understand how they may not meet yet, and we'll see what happens by Friday. It comes down to the best offer, and maybe at you know the 15th overall pick will have more value on Friday. But as far as the Canucks sitting there at 15 and perhaps making a selection, we'll see who's going to be available. And you know your final draft ranking lists has a number of really interesting players in that range, and one player you have a 14 is Roger McQueen, who's you know he's been a lot higher in a lot of other people's lists, and he's had the injury concern, of course. What have you heard around him, and you know is there a chance if the Canucks hold at 15 then they actually get a chance to draft a big talented center?
I don't think he's going to be there at 15, and the only reason I have him at 14 is the concern I had with the injury. And my understanding from the medical reports is that it's not something that's going to be reoccurring, but he's going to have consistent maintenance every year regarding injury. So he may end up missing anywhere between 5 to 10% of the games every year just for maintenance days for the back, just to make sure he gets through. So I had to take that into consideration why I dropped him down. If he didn't have that, he's in the top seven. You know, because it's hard to find a big, strong centerman who can produce some points and can play in the playoffs, that kind of style of player. I don't expect him to be there for the Canucks. If I'm sitting in the Canucks shoes and there's a defenseman available, so if there's a Kayshon Atchison, there's a Logan Hensler, there's a Sacha Boumediene, I take the defenseman. Because I look at it in two ways, particularly from the Vancouver perspective, but overall is – the term best player available is very nebulous because it depends on what the value system of each organization is. However, when you choose a player, you can look at what the value is for that your particular organization, but then the marketplace. And defensemen, whether it's in trade deadline, whether it's in free agency, they always end up costing more to acquire in any situation. So when in doubt, take the defenseman. And, you know, you look, I don't care that they have Willander and then they have and the big Pettersson kid. Get more D. When in doubt, draft more D. Because if it's anything close to being equal, take the defenseman. So if I'm in the war room for Vancouver, I'd be pointing towards defenseman and take one. And just be happy you got one.
Yeah, and there's a few that are kind of in that range. There's Boumediene, obviously. Radim Mertka is rated highly in this draft, and Aitchison, as you mentioned as well. It's definitely like there's going to be D available in that area, and it's a strange draft because it doesn't feel like there's obviously it hasn't been rated that highly, but there are a lot of centermen and defensemen available here in this top 15.
Lots of centermen. I would say there's a lot of D in the first round, but there's going to be a run in the middle part of that. I'd say between probably 11 till about 17, 18, there's going to be a run of defensemen that go because defensemen are coveted. And, you know, Vancouver's in that sweet spot for that. So if you can get one, and then there's a gap really for some D that, I mean, Henry Bruskevich is probably in that 20 to 25 range. You know, maybe you also put a Cameron Reed in that range as well. And then it starts to really drop off once you're getting into the second round. So there's not as many D. It's part of what this draft class is. It's not a lack of quality. It's a lack of quantity. And inside of each of my ranges, there's a player missing. So I'm going through like to my A, to my A minuses, B plus, to B minus. There's like one or two players missing. And all of a sudden, when I add it up, it looks like 10 players. Which is why I actually had a hard time getting to 50 players who I thought would play more than 200 games. On a historical average, it's 59. So I'm about 9 players short. Now, in 5 to 7 years from now, that could end up mitigating itself, and it could end up being average. But as I sit today, I think the quantity is below average, and the quality is certainly average, maybe even a little bit above average.
And I think, you know, as far as first round picks are concerned, that's to me what matters here. And for all this talk about this draft and how the top 12 is really good, but then it really falls off afterwards. And you know, obviously, right. I know exactly. I was going to get to that for you. Like, I think tiers are different for everybody. And as much as there might be consensus outside that there is this top 12, we know come draft day, every team has a different list. And somebody from that top 12 is going to be there at 13, 14, 15, 18, 20, even. That happens every single year. But is it overstating things talking about how bad this draft is in the first round outside of top 12?
I do, because I think what happens is it's low lining fruit, and then narratives tend to, you know, build a life of its own, and it starts to tumble. And I think it breaks off at about 18. 18 is where I have it starts to, I'm not saying it gets bad, but it just starts to dip into a different area where the defensemen would be number fours, the forwards would be F7s, maybe, you know, in that range down to maybe an F8, but, you know, third liners, that's what it's going to end up being pretty much from 18 down to, you know, 33. And then, you know, 34 down, you're getting to, you know, the F8s, F9s, the number 5 and 6 defensemen. And at the end of the day, this actually may be a draft where there's a lot of 5 and 6 D. And then, you know, people may scoff at that, but look at the trade deadline. Like, look what happened. Look what teams got for Ben Chiarot or Joel Edmondson. They get a lot. Like, those type of defensemen are valued. I went and changed how I weighted my draft based on what was valued in the trade deadline, what was valued at free agency, what was valued in the playoffs. And I started weighting things differently over the last, you know, 5 to 6 years. And many of those, what you would call a meat and potato defensive defenseman, have pushed their way up my list because they end up playing. Like, they end up playing 300, 400, 500, 600 games. And I'd rather take that player than some one-dimensional skilled forward who can only play on a second line or doesn't play at all.
So one player we've at least heard a little bit connected to the Vancouver Canucks, and I've certainly seen him mock draft to the Canucks a little bit here in the last week or so. Braden Coutts out of the Thunderbirds, centerman, two-way player, at least that's some of the profile. What do you like about the player? I see you have him at number 20 in your rankings.
Look, he could end up being an elite third-line center for you. If you want somebody that is going to provide energy, he's going to play greasy. He's going to match up defensively against the other team's top line. He's going to be number one penalty killer. He's going to have versatility in the lineup and drags people into the fight. That's Braden Coutts. I have a lot of time for him. It's just why I had him at 20, even though I think he's only going to be a third line center, but he could be elite third line center. And it just solidifies what happens in the middle of your lineup. I'm a big proponent of drafting centers and defensemen because they're just so much more valuable long-term for your organization. If you do have to trade them, you're going to get a better rate of return. So I have a lot of time for a guy like Braden Coutts because he's greasy and he's a piece of work. And I mean that in the most complimentary way. He is not quite as nasty as a Brady Martin, but the kid's got a lot of jam.
Well, it feels like that profile of player, especially with what we just saw out of Sam Bennett through these playoffs and what he's going to get here, either from the Panthers or in free agency, it feels like it's kind of the perfect time for a player like that to get a lot of love in a draft, right? You know, I've heard, you know, teams in the past be like, find me the next Tom Wilson. It's like, well, good luck. But it feels like Sam Bennett might be that next mold that teams are looking for.
Well, the funny thing is things really haven't changed.
Yeah.
So let's look back at when the LA Kings won both their cups. They had a bit of a nasty team, and you know, in forward and in defense. And then so did St. Louis, and so did Vegas. And you know, we go down the list: Tampa Bay, Florida. The only team that was a bit of an anomaly, Chicago, had a lot of grease and grit, especially up front. The only anomaly, I think, it was Colorado. They weren't really that big. They had a few guys, obviously, that could grind it out, but they won primarily on skill. So this kind of illusion or narrative that the game has changed, the game hasn't changed. Not in the playoffs. Maybe it's changed in the regular season, but the playoffs have been the same for the last 15 years. And the Stanley Cup winners, primarily 90% of them, have proven that out. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's like, look, if that's what helps you win in the playoffs, and this is what's valuable at the trade deadline, this is what's valuable at free agency, why not apply that to your draft and just draft those players? Like, I had Jason Buchla on the show. He reviewed my top 32 list, and he started to laugh because we ended up discussing more about the B game of players than the A game of players. Mm-hmm. And I'm a big proponent of understanding, look, if you're a star player, or even if you're a good player and you're playing 18 minutes a game as a forward, how much do you really have the puck in your stick? Is that 5%? So what are you doing the other 95% of the time to help your team win when you don't have the puck in your stick? Well, that's why I look strictly to the B game of a player, because when things get nasty in the playoffs, you better have a B game. Because if your A game isn't working, then you just get nullified.
Well, one player the Canucks have also kind of been linked to as far as interest in a prospect is a guy you have at 22, Cole Reschne. And I think what's interesting about him is left-handed center, but size-wise pretty similar to Braden Coutts, him being the right-hand guy. And obviously a real good playmaker, had a big season with Victoria, 90 points in 60 games, a big playoff as well. Is there some question to his B game and maybe why he's a bit lower down considering how productive he was this year?
No, it's only based on height. Like, he's, you know, in the 5'10 range, but he's built like a fire hydrant. And he's, you know, has excellent playmaking ability from the junior, you know, junior standpoint. And, you know, he plays with a B game. So that's not going to be a problem. It's just, you know, at the end of the day, size matters. Now, he's going to be probably 5'10 and 200 pounds. It's going to be really hard to knock over. You know, probably a similar build to what Sidney Crosby has. Short fire hydrant. However, at the end of the day, and I'm partial to this as well, is I want players with size. You know, like, look, all the defensemen I covet, the players I covet, especially on the wing, are big, because I'm all about winning in the playoffs. And at the end of the day, there are teams that have driven themselves to the Stanley Cup final who are not necessarily the highest in the standings because they have those type of players. So, yeah, Cole Reschne certainly is a consideration. Would I have him at 15? I think there's some other players in there that might be more highly rated, but if the Canucks take him there, I'd understand, you know, the reasoning behind that.
One more on the draft. I wanted to ask you about Victor Ekeland, who you have a number 7, and there's been some polarizing opinions, some having him far lower and some wondering if he's going to slip a little bit. Not that he would be there at 15, but is there a chance that Victor Ekeland is a guy that, you know, ends up going a bit later than people expect?
He could end up easily going somewhere between 7 and 12. But because he's so skilled, I don't think so. Look, he's a smaller player. However, if you watch him play, he's a dog in the bone. He is so relentless to chase down the puck. He's got a little bit of that Happy Gilmore in him. It's my puck. Don't you dare touch my puck. So he has this, the younger brother syndrome, where, you know, he had to battle for everything. So he's got a chip on his shoulder, and I like that about his game. So if you're going to be a smaller player and you're going to succeed in the playoffs, you have to have that chip on your shoulder. You have to be willing to go and battle. You have to go into the danger areas. You have to be willing to take hits to make plays, and he has shown that. And to couple that with his skill set, it's the reason why I have a smaller player in my top 12, is because I think he can bring both of those things equally.
Before we let you go, Shane, I mean, we could talk draft with you all day, but I know when we've talked to you, we've talked about the Canucks' struggle to develop players over the years, and they just come off winning the Calder Cup, and, you know, it's there's some veteran talent there, but it's Arshdeep Bains and Linus Karlsson that lead the AHL playoffs in points, and Artur Shelov ends up being the MVP. Is how much of a sign is it that the Canucks are doing some things better under the hood with their development of players?
Well, certainly winning matters, and, you know, getting your team through to win a Calder championship means something. You won a championship. Now, unfortunately, Bains and Karlsson, they're not kids anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, those are, when you're 25, 26, when you're draft plus 7, you're not a prospect anymore.
Yeah.
You're a pro player. So when I'm talking about prospects, you know, I'm not looking at those two guys. I'm looking at Lakera Mäki and Klimovich. And you know, unfortunately, you know, Atu Rati missed a bunch of games. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what I consider the prospects, even like Mancini, right? But he's even pushing it. So it's when you get into the 25, 26-year-old, you're not a prospect anymore. Like, you've already probably been a pro for 5 years. So it's great. You know, and I think it's important because you've exposed those young players to what it takes to win. So that really matters. And kudos to Manny Mehotra for, you know, coaching this team and winning the Calder Cup. And it's the first championship this organization's had. So for me, that really matters. And it sends a signal off to obviously the rest of the potential free agents that are coming out of college or the CHL, that this is a destination and a place you want to play.
He is Shane Malloy. You can follow him on Twitter by his name and check out Hockey Prospect Radio. I know a lot of our listeners are saying that they're loving this conversation, so you can check out more of Shane at Shane Malloy on Twitter and check out Hockey Prospect Radio on Sirius XM NHL Network and HockeyProspectRadio.com. Thanks so much for this, Shane. We'll be talking more this week. Thank you.
Anytime, gentlemen. Have a great night.
There he is, the great Shane Malloy, joining us here on Canuck Central. He joins us on the hotline, powered by Power West Industries. Don't get caught in the dark when it matters most. Visit them at powerwest.ca today. They keep the lights on. You know, you talk to Shane about this draft, and I'm infinitely more excited about what the Canucks could get at 15th overall after talking to Shane.
Yeah, and you know, we've had a lot of these discussions, and we were having it in the first segment too about the top 12, and you know how there's a big drop off, and every time I will give the disclaimer that that's based on the outside industry lists. And every time you see a top 12, I guarantee you, you're going to see a few of those guys go way later. So if you're so caught up in those top 12 you've seen on a list, I guarantee you one of those guys is going to be there at 14, 15, 16. Like, that's always what happens, right? And I do think this year's first round pick, if the Canucks do hold on to it, we shouldn't look at it as, oh, they're getting a bad prospect, it's a bad draft. With the first round pick, you're still looking at a pretty talented hockey player. And that's why, you know, I'm curious by Friday.
Yeah.
As much as all the talk and posturing is we want future first round picks, we want more, the draft isn't good. Is that truly what happens on Friday?
Yeah, especially when there are so many centermen and defensemen available, those can be valuable assets to add to your organization. And I think a lot of this narrative around the draft is... I think there's some reason for it, right? There's a look ahead to next year and how that draft is kind of overshadowing this one already because it's looked at as a loaded 2026 draft, but that doesn't mean there isn't talent here in this current 2025 edition of the entry draft. And come Friday, there's going to be players that drop. There's just too much variance in all the lists that I look at. There's so much variance in that top 15 that I know for sure that's only going to result in a lot of variance coming to the actual selections on Friday night.
Yeah, before we get out quickly, that's what happened with when the Canucks took Lekromäki. He was on many lists, top 10, top 9, 8 on some lists, and he was there at 15.
Yeah. So we'll see. It's going to be interesting. Friday, we're going to have full draft coverage here on Sportsnet 650 right away with Canuck Central. Draft starts at 4, and we'll have you all through the draft, give you the Canucks pick and everything else that happens during Friday night's draft. The BC Lions, it's the biggest rivalry party of the year. Lions versus Rough Riders, Saturday, July 19th at 4 p.m. with the Watermelon Smash on Terry Fox Plaza. Get tickets at bclions.com. Harmon Dial of The Athletic joins us next on Canuck Central.
Now it's time for our wrap-up. Let's give it everything we've got. Ready? Begin.
Back in on Canuck Central, Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, final segment of the program this hour. Brought to you by BC Liquor until June 28th. Explore their exceptional selection and save like $2 off Tanqueray London Dry Gin. Visit your nearest BC Liquor today. Enjoy responsibly. We just heard that the F1 commercial there in the stop set, and I hear Brad Pitt's voice, and I'm like, Brad Pitt would easily be the oldest F1 driver of all time. Would he not?
Easily.
Like, he's what, 60 plus? You know, there can't be too many F1 drivers that have gone past 50 years old. That's impossible.
No.
Do you think he's going to play a character that's 60 plus, though, or is he just going to be like in his 40s?
I don't know. I mean, he still looks great for 61. I'll give him that. But it's probably just suspending reality a little bit further. Anyways. I'm getting off on tangents again.
You're getting caught getting all worked up over stupid things again.
Let's get on the hotline. Powered by Power West Industries, we welcome in our next guest. Joins us weekly here on Sportsnet 650. It is Harmon Dial of The Athletic. Thanks for this, Harm. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
We are excited. Draft week Canucks are champs as well as they finish off the Charlotte Checkers in six games. Let's start there with the conversation. You know, Linus Karlsson leads all players in points in the AHL playoffs. Archie Baines is number two. And I know they are older as prospects. Certainly Karlsson is into his mid-20s now. But he really started to show signs as well in his appearances with the Vancouver Canucks towards the end of the year. Have we seen a player that looks like he's ready to take a full-time NHL role in your eyes?
Definitely. And the interesting part is you have a few contenders who could be ready to take that step, and it's going to make training camp really interesting because Canucks don't have a lot of roster spots necessarily available, but they have a lot of these guys on the bubble who are going to be pushing, and it's going to be fascinating to track who actually breaks through. I mean, with Karlsson, we've seen that he has a small area skill. He's really smart finishing in and around the net. He is reliable enough along the boards that you can trust him in a bottom six role at the NHL level. And, of course, it isn't just this Abbey run. He looked like he belonged at the NHL level for the senior Canucks down the stretch. So I could see him being the kind of player that you stick him into fourth line kind of role. He maybe even plays in that front power play too for you, and can just sort of be a low-maintenance, steady, reliable option for you. But it also wouldn't surprise me if a Max Sasson or an Archie Baines with a big training camp can really push themselves into that conversation as well. On the back end, we're obviously going to be tracking Mancini if he's still with the organization, because there's obviously still the possibility that they dangle him as a trade chip to address some of their forward needs. And then, of course, in net, still interested to see what happens with Artur Shelov as far as are the Canucks able to come to terms on a reasonable extension with Thatcher Demko? And barring that, if they aren't able to do that, could they dangle Demko to prevent the possibility of losing him next season for nothing and roll into next season with the Lankinen-Shelov tandem? Or in the event that Demko does get extended, then I think we're approaching the territory where with Shelov's being waiver eligible this coming fall, you may have to look at trading him in the summer. So a bunch of players sort of pushing, and we haven't even talked about Kirill Kudryavtsev yet. Lekomaki as well. Lekomaki could be a top nine contributor on an ELC. He obviously didn't have the strongest playoff run per se, but overall, I thought it was a pretty promising season in North America for him. And I'm not too worried about his body wearing down a little bit. And we saw him bounce back in the Calder Cup final as well. So all of this is to say, there are a bunch of guys. There are several names that are worth keeping an eye on as we get closer to the offseason and then, of course, training camp.
Yeah, there are a number of guys knocking on the door and to varying degrees, right? And we'll see which one of the guys can really assert themselves as a real contributor. And I think you mentioned Kudryavtsev. I can't speak for the organization, but I can't imagine anybody moved up in their view more than he did, considering came into the season as a former seventh-round draft pick. Some thought he would be in the ECHL, and then he was by far their best defenseman on a Calder-winning team. I can't imagine there's anybody who's moved up in their eyes more than Kudryavtsev has.
Absolutely. His composure, how he moves the puck, the fact that his defensive game held up despite him being so young and not the biggest guy, is so impressive. The way that he defends a rush, he's just so smart in every phase of the game, whether it's with the puck, whether it's without it. And I think it was Cody Severtson had, where he's only on the ice for three goals against during the entire Calder Cup playoff run. Obviously had the best plus minus, and of course plus minus isn't a perfect stat, but it speaks volumes to be trusted in such a high leverage role and succeed to the extent that he did. As a first year 21-year-old adjusting to North American pro hockey. So absolutely, he massively exceeded expectations, and it's nice that he is a little bit on the younger side as well, because it means that there isn't it's not as if he needs to, for instance, be pushing to make the NHL team out of camp this fall. It would make a lot of sense for him to go back to the AHL, spend a sophomore campaign there, really dominate. And that's helpful to sort of have that stagger, because the Canucks already have You know, Willander, they obviously have DPD, they have Mancini, they have these glut of younger D prospects ready to push this coming season. And it's nice that Kudryavtsev, because he's on the younger side, you can stick him in the AHL and allow him to just continue marinating and let him bake. And then when he's ready, in a couple of seasons, for example, then you can look at elevating him into an NHL role.
Yeah, I mean, he was drafted in 2022 as an 18-year-old, right? And, you know, it's been a few years, but to turn pro right away and to have the year that he's had so far, it's not very often you see players go from, you know, the I know he was 20 when he came over, but still, to go from CHL and then have the success he has in his first year. It doesn't mean with his size he's going to be good, but that type of ascension in your first year usually means a really good thing for young defensemen.
Absolutely. It's a really unique profile too. And
yeah.
Hey, as a 5'11" defenseman, the challenge for him is always going to be, how do you carve out a role where Kudryavtsev is such a talented all-around defenseman, but in the NHL, there's typically a size bias where if you're under 6 feet, teams usually want you to be sort of an elite power play kind of guy or an elite puck mover. And so there aren't a lot of guys that, in terms of Kudryavtsev's physical makeup, tend to sort of have success at the NHL level, because Kudryavtsev isn't projected to be a power play one type and having that kind of upside. But I think when you watch him play, and again, just how smart he is, the decisions he makes with the puck, how well he defends at such a, especially in the AHL, which is a really physical heavy league. Like, as a smaller rookie body, to be able to have that kind of defensive success, it gives me confidence that he could potentially be one of those rare outliers that, despite not being the biggest, flashiest defenseman, can carve out an NHL role for himself.
So you look at, all these Abbotsford players are having success, and, the thing about it is, you know, who's going to be the one that graduates to a top six role? And maybe that's a big ask for any of them, but ultimately, like Lekkerimäki, you know, he still showed, even in these last few games of the Calder Cup final, he still showed like a lot of good signs. Obviously, he had the 2-goal game, but his all around game and his IQ is there. I think the biggest trouble for him is, like, you've gone so late into the summer now. Are you going to be able to put on the weight and do those kinds of things that were required of him, or one of the things that he really needs to get done going into next year? It's kind of a shortened timeline for him now.
Yeah, it's definitely tougher, and I agree with you in the sense that he has the IQ, he has a shot to be a really productive player at the NHL level. And I also like the fact that when we saw him in the NHL, you never had to worry about him defensively, which is always sometimes a worry for smallish wingers, is their puck management, their defensive positioning. And that's an area where he actually impressed me a lot. But there's no question that he needs to get bigger and stronger in order to not lose as many puck battles, be stronger along the boards, be more of a contributor on the forecheck, where nobody's going to expect him to necessarily come barreling in as F1 and create havoc, but you still got to be able to do your fair share. And also, if he could add just a little bit more pop to his first step as well, that would help as an undersized player. But like you said, there isn't a lot of runway left in the summer for him to necessarily have a quantum leap in that area. But with that said, overall, when you step back and look at his regular season success, over half a goal per game at the AHL level, most players who are drafted with a similar pedigree as Lekkerimäki and produce at that kind of clip in their first North American season go on to eventually become top six NHL players. And so with a profile like that, you feel good overall about his development curve. And I mean, look, best case scenario is he has, let's say, like a Matt Coronato type development arc, where Coronato in Calgary similarly drafted in the middle of the first round is Lekkerimäki, a year older than him. And Coronado's first year turning pro was similar to this past year for Lekkerimäki, where it was split between the NHL and the AHL. Coronado didn't produce a lot at the NHL level, was very good at the AHL level. And then this past season, he broke out with 20 plus goals. And so Fleckermacki, that's kind of what you're hoping as the best case scenario is maybe he can take a step and give you, let's say, 15 plus goals in a middle six role. But you're at this stage, obviously not expecting him to, let's say, replace Brock Besser's production in the top six.
Yeah, and I think that's going to take some time. And I like Lekromaki a lot, but I look at him as, you know, maybe a couple of years before he gets to that point to replace that type of production. And as far as finding guys that can replace production this year with Besser not coming back, we're all waiting to see what the Canucks do. And they have indicated they want to be aggressive via trade, but so far they haven't been able to make a trade. And there have been some talk that if they can't, they're going to have to hold firm and be patient. But considering the stakes, considering what the Canucks need to do to improve their team, what's your sense of what they ultimately will do here over the course of the next week?
Yeah, they're backed into a tough spot because we all know how large the stakes are as far as them needing to get back on track and have a really good season next year so that when Quinn Hughes is eligible for a contract extension on July 1st, 2026, you're able to hopefully pitch and sell him on a plan to stay in Vancouver long-term. This team can't really afford to miss the playoffs again and have another underwhelming season like that. And to ensure that they get back to that level, we've spoken about this for months now. They need multiple top six forwards. And we know that they would probably love to dangle that 15th pick especially, but the challenging part about this summer is that there are so many teams, even the non-playoff ones, that are actively trying to improve and also have lots of cap space and also have first that they're willing to dangle. And there's an absence of sellers on the market right now. And so it's very competitive to add top-of-the-lineup talent. It feels like every team, or at least half the league, is looking for, let's say, a top six center. The other half of the league could definitely use another top six winger. The competition is fierce. The pool of available players, especially because of the weak free agent class, isn't very good. And so the Canucks are going to have to sort of either get creative in terms of targeting a player and seeing upside in a guy that maybe other teams don't regard as highly, or just sort of accepting that they may not be able to get all their shopping done this summer and sort of look at it as like a, maybe you get one of your ideal targets this summer and the rest is a case of you preserving your trade capital and looking at potential in-season upgrades to really, complete the product. Because that's the other thing to keep in mind is the roster that you have on paper on July 7th isn't what you'll necessarily have at the end of the season. And this management group has shown that they're willing to make in-season splashes. So that's something to kind of keep in mind is maybe they won't be, I shouldn't say maybe, they likely won't be able to accomplish everything they want to, but if they can partially get to that goal and then perhaps save some of their ammo for in-season moves, maybe that's the route that they're going to be forced to take.
I know we talk a lot about Pugh Suter for good reason, because he had a really good year and there aren't a lot of center options, but does it make sense to you that the Canucks are pretty firm on trying to find an upgrade before they go too deep and trying to bring him back?
I think they need to aim higher than Suter, and I love him for so many different reasons, but coming off the year that he had, he shot 18%. I don't think he's consistently going to give you 25 goals. And the idea of paying him, let's say, a $4.5 million cap hit, that's steep for a team that already has a lot of money sort of invested into middle of the lineup forwards that aren't true top six contributors, especially the situation the Canucks are in. They've got about $12 million in cap space. That doesn't leave you with a lot to meaningfully upgrade your top six if you're committing a chunk of that to Suter. So my concern wouldn't even necessarily be, oh, that Suter at $4.5 million would be this terrible contract. It would more be big picture stepping back and saying to myself, well, what's the path for this Canucks team to actually become a contender if they aren't able to land the true top of the lineup difference makers that they need to raise and elevate their ceiling as a team? If you re-sign Suter and make a couple of other sort of middle of the lineup additions, especially when you have Brock Besser leaving the door. I wouldn't view that as a significant improvement as far as your roster compared to this past year. So as much as I like Suter, I think the Canucks are sort of right up until this point as far as not prioritizing re-signing him at a high point and trying their best to find higher ceiling options before turning to him.
Harm, always appreciate the time. Thanks for this.
Thanks, guys.
There is Harmon Dial of The Athletic joining us here on Canucks Central, as we've got a lot to get into over the course of the week. You know, it's going to be a big one for the Vancouver Canucks. We'll see what they do. A lot up in the air.
Yeah.
A lot of options.
A lot of options. I'm super excited because we know that the Suter thing is fast because we talked about this a lot. Like, we all like Suter. We all love to have him come back. But considering how much space the Canucks have, it makes sense to prioritize aiming a lot higher. If Suter comes back, I think it's an acknowledgement that they couldn't get anywhere near what they wanted and they had to kind of come back to pew Suter, right?
Or he couldn't get what he wanted.
Both things can be true. Yeah. We'll end the show on that.
We've got lots coming tomorrow. We're hoping Phil DiGiuseppe, who was flipping birds out at Charlotte Checkers Deej. Fans, talking trash to the team that just beat your squad for in a title-winning game. I mean, come on.
Love it.
So we'll have, hopefully, Phil DiGiuseppe will be able to connect with him tomorrow also, overrated, underrated, and Kevin Woodley as well on a Wednesday edition of Canucks Central. A little bit more breaking news from PWHL Vancouver. The entry draft is ongoing. They've traded their second round pick and their third round selection to the Toronto Scepters for Kristen Campbell, gold medal winning goalie with Canada in Beijing in 2022. And they get Toronto's third round pick back. So they give up their second and a third for Kristen Campbell. I'm not the most in-depth of the PWHL and all of its talents, but I look at Vancouver's roster and it looks like a win now team.
Very competitive.
Because they've just added another big time goalie. Yeah. They already have Mashmeyer, who they took in the expansion draft. So they've got a good tandem. They added a 35-year-old scorer with their first round selection, the all time leading scorer for Finland at the World Championships in Karvinen. So like I'm looking at this team and I'm like, well, PWHL, they're Vancouver, they're looking to win right away.
Yeah.
That's at least the way they're setting up the first year of this franchise.
Hopefully it's kind of like the Vegas Golden Knights in their first year.
That would be fun. So yes, that's the latest on PWHL Vancouver. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, back tomorrow with a 4 o'clock start on Canucks Central. Four producers, Arash and Josh, my co-host Sat. I am Dan. You've been listening to Canucks Central.